You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
I don't know if have I ever told you my, I don't know if it's a time slip, time travel, missing time. Have I ever told you my time story?
No, I don't think I've heard your time story.
Okay, I was driving home from work, at the newspaper when I used to work in the industry, and on Saturday nights I had the late shift, and I'd drive home, you know, like 1 o'clock in the morning, and I lived like 50 miles away from Kansas City, so. It was
wow.
a heck of a drive, but I was driving home and I got to this spot that said there was a road sign that said the name of my hometown 5 miles. Okay, and I was driving. I had the cruise control set. It was 55 miles an hour. I had the cruise control set, and as soon as I passed that sign, the radio started playing my favorite Rolling Stones song, "Gimme Shelter."
All right,
which is like 4 minutes 26 seconds long. And I thought, great, I'll be able to listen to this all the way home. And I kind of got road hypnosis. And I woke up from my road hypnosis, and I was, because the cruise control was dragging. And I'm like, crap, this shouldn't be, because I'm on a flat stretch of road. There's no way, you know, for my cruise control to be dragging. And I looked, and I was going up a hill.
Oh, weird.
And it was really foggy. And I kicked off the cruise control, and I, you know, just drove. And I went up and down two more hills until I saw a light in through the fog, and I pulled in, and it was Jehovah's Witness Church on a gravel road. Well, I pulled in there and turned around, and seeing the Jehovah's Witness Church, I knew exactly where I was. I was 5 miles past my hometown.
Huh.
So I'd driven 10 miles, and as I sit there, I realized, you know, I was thinking, what the hell happened to me? And I realized, hey, Gimme Shelter's still on. And it was on for another minute and a half.
Weird.
So for somehow, I went, you know, 10 miles, not knowing it, in, you know, like 3 minutes.
That's odd. That is weird. The fog has something to do with it, I think.
Maybe so. I have no idea. I can't claim to know anything that happened or if anything paranormal happened. I have no idea. I'm not laying claim to knowing anything that happened. I'm just saying I have no idea what it was.
It's a lot of these stories seem to happen, like, involving driving. I'm sure you've heard these kind of stories, like, you know, I wouldn't call them, like, for lack of a better term, like, phantom rest stop type things, you know, where people will pull in and eat at a little diner, and it'll seem kind of weird, and then the next time they're driving, it won't be there anymore kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I've heard stories like that, but yeah, driving, a lot of stuff, weird stuff happens. Well, I mean, Betty and Barney Hill were driving.
Exactly. Now, I know that, for What Lurks Beyond, you did. You looked into the Madman Markham story. Any update on that? Have we heard from him since the book came out?
Yeah, it was really. I just really felt great doing this. And I'll have to thank my readers at From the Shadows, because somebody said, "Hey, I know how to get a hold of him," and I got a hold of Mike Markham. And found out what has happened to him, you know, ever since he disappeared. Because he disappeared. The last time he was on Art Bell was like 1998. And after that, nobody heard from him. Which was in my book, I talked with friends of his in St. Joseph, and they're like, no, he just disappeared. You know, no goodbye, no Christmas card the next year, nothing. He was just gone. Which is bizarre, because he was building this time machine.
Right.
Out of a Jacob's ladder, you know, so he had enough electricity to fry him into, you know, dust that he was planning on jumping through. So, you know, disappearing, yeah, I could kind of see that. But no, I tracked him down, and he's living in Cincinnati, which is where he was from to begin with. What had happened is he got money. People started, because of his exposure on Coast to Coast AM back in the 90s, people started donating money to him, and he was able to rent a warehouse in Kansas City and build a, you know, big model of his time machine. And he practiced, you know, on the time jump by throwing, like, grapefruit through.
Yeah.
And the grapefruit would disappear and he would go around the parking lot, and it would, you know, reappear in various different parts of the parking lot. Because something that people don't get about time travel, which is really kind of scary, you know, if you build a time machine and you jump through it and you actually go 10 years in the future, where do you land?
Right, because it's like the Earth's rotating, that kind of thing.
The Earth's rotating, the galaxy, you know, the Milky Way's rotating, our galaxy's rotating, our solar system, I mean, is rotating. So we'd be in the middle of space.
Yeah. Ooh, creepy.
Yeah, so, I mean, that it would disappear and reappear someplace else. He threw a hamster in that lived.
Oh, good.
Yeah, well, not the first one, but the second one did. So he decided that he videotaped all of this stuff, and he decided, you know, it's time. He had notes. I mean, he had everything written down. All of his equipment was there. All of his videotapes were there. And he's like, people are going to have this. We're going to have this. I'm going to be able, you know, to have all this knowledge of this time machine and show the world. And he jumped through, and he woke up in a field, you know, in Cincinnati, Ohio. He said it was winter. And he just woke up. He had no idea who he was, had no idea where he was. It was out there, of course, outside the city. And he started walking. Somebody found him. He went to a homeless shelter for a while. Eventually, he started remembering who he was and what had happened. And after 2 years, he went back to, he had enough money to go back to Kansas City, and the warehouse was empty. All of his stuff was gone.
Oh, God. Weird. And now he's back in Cincinnati.
He's back in Cincinnati, yeah.
And he has no idea who took all his stuff?
Nope, not a clue. No, he said he tried to get a hold of a couple of his benefactors who had given him money and has not been able to find them. Yeah, he said that he wanted to, you know, he would be interested in resuming his experiments if he had the cash, but he doesn't. I actually wrote an article for Nexus Magazine a couple of years ago about this, and there's some people in England who got a hold of me who were interested in helping him out financially, and I hooked them up and you know, really, you know, did a bad job following up. I haven't checked back with him for, you know, since then.
Strange. Now, how does he know, given that he was all, like, disoriented, does he know sort of, like, when, how much time elapsed between the leap, I guess you could say? I'm a big Quantum Leap fan, so I guess I'd be glad to get that in there. But from the leap from Kansas City to Cincinnati?
It was, he's pretty sure it was a year or two.
So, like, he went in, came out 2 years later in Cincinnati.
Yeah, when I talked to him, he said, I'm 37 years old officially, but actually I'm only 35.
Weird. Holy shit. See, that's when you need, like, a cohort who's going to stick around in the warehouse. It's like to pay the rent and shit while you're in the future.
Yeah, it's nice to have friends.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay, could you, like, cover my back if I disappear and go into the future? That would be awesome.
Then again, yeah, then that person probably ends up on trial for, like, murder or something. Till you show up, like, 2 years later.
He probably had somebody, and you can see him when Markham disappeared, just kind of slink away.
Yeah, it's like, it's been like a week. He's not coming back.
Yeah.
I gotta get the hell out of here before people start asking questions. Very weird. Well, that's an interesting twist on the story. I'd never heard this update on the Madman Markham story. Very weird.
Well, I'm the guy who broke the update, so you're hearing it here first, folks.
Nice. That's why we have Off It On for Off It's Oddities. What about this terror in the shopping mall? I'm a big fan of malls, so this story kind of stood out to me because this sounds like a very creepy sort of like old-timey mall that has a presence in it.
Yeah, the mall. Yeah, I've been a big fan of malls for a long time because I mean, where did I hang out in high school? At the mall. Used to go watch the Rocky Horror Picture Show at midnight during the summer. At the mall. And the mall I went and hung out with has got like 4 stores now.
Yeah.
It looks like the zombie apocalypse already happened. Yeah. I talked to the woman. The mall had been built in the 70s, like where all the malls were, you know, popular back then. She worked in this mall, starting in 2005 at a retail clothing store. And it was, you know, just a job. She was assistant manager. A few things started happening, just minor things at first. You know, if everybody'd gone home, she'd be, you know, working on the books, and she'd hear hangers rattling. And she'd go check, and there wouldn't be any hangers rattling. There'd be nobody in the store. She started hearing footsteps on, you know, on the tile floor when she was there alone, and, you know, she'd go look, and nobody'd be there. Now, this sort of thing kind of creeped her out, but she kind of ignored it because, you know, it didn't harm her. Strange things started escalating. People who worked for us started feeling, you know, saying that they, you know, in this one corner of the store, they just felt sad. The store just felt sad, you know, in this corner. People who were trying on clothes in the back of the changing room started complaining that, you know, somebody's slamming the door, somebody's beating on the door when I'm back here, and they'd be the only person back there. Eventually, employees started hearing somebody, kind of a sexless voice, they couldn't tell if it was male or female, saying hey or hi.
Huh.
When nobody else was there. Bulbs, light bulbs burned out like crazy. Just little bitty haunting things, like that. Until the assistant manager, or the manager left, and Susan, the assistant manager, was appointed manager. And then things really started to escalate. Employees started seeing a man in a brown business suit, you know, going through the clothes. And when they approached him and asked if he needed help, he'd disappear. Sale signs they'd have up for merchandise, they'd find, you know, it'd just fall on the floor for no reason. You know, they'd start finding pencils and notebooks and, things of that nature just sitting in weird places.
Huh.
Eventually, there was a cold spot back in the stock room, and Susan was back there one day. It was during operating hours, so there was another employee there, and this employee was helping a customer out in the front, and Susan was back in the stock room, and she went into the bathroom that was back in the stock room, and when she went to get out of the bathroom, she couldn't. The door wasn't locked, it just wouldn't budge. And, you know, she screamed and nobody heard her, and she started really pounding her shoulder on the door, and eventually it moved far enough away that where she could squeeze out of the door crack, and she looked, and there was these, you know, big boxes of merchandise that had been stacked up against the door.
Oh, God.
Yeah, she went and asked, and then the other person there was like, you know, nobody's been in the storeroom. I've been helping this customer the whole time. You know, and eventually, she got scared enough of being there, especially when she was manager and had to be there alone, where she called a paranormal team to come in and take a look. And this paranormal team had a psychic.
Oh, God.
And she could tell when the psychic walked in that whatever was inhabiting her store did not like the psychic. She could feel that the energy was just pissed off.
Eey.
And the psychic, you know, commanded this presence to leave right before the paranormal team left. And after that, things really escalated. Susan went in the next Monday, because this was over the weekend. She went in the next Monday, and all the signs that she had posted for sales were like scattered everywhere. And it took a while to put everything back up. And she was talking about to one of the employees about, about the signs, like, what's going on? And then your employee's like, I don't know, but, you know, this place is haunted. We really need to do something about it. And they heard a cracking noise, and they looked up, and a display that weighed about 120 pounds that was, you know, took a whole lot of effort to bolt to the wall, broke away from the wall, shot out about 5 feet, and crashed to the ground.
Jesus.
And at that point, they were like, F this.
Yeah.
And they walked out of the store, and when they got out of the store, somebody from the neighboring store had come out, and because their entire electricity went out, and they started talking, you know, about weird things that were happening, and this employee from the other store pointed into Susan's store, and she goes, look. And all the signs they just put back up on the wall and over clothing racks, you know, were blowing like it was in a big wind.
God.
So, Susan quit.
Jesus. I guess you never know. It could have been like somebody that died in the store like years ago in the 70s or something when the mall was built.
Or something. I mean, you never know. I mean, people put hauntings with buildings, and a lot of times it isn't with a building, it's with a place. It's been a number of years ago. Me and a couple other guys were drinking beer, playing, which has nothing to do with the story. drinking some beer and playing a card game called Pitch, in the basement of a friend's house. And the basement was completely empty. It was a new house. As far as he knew, nothing had ever been built on the property. But the guy's name was Victor. And anyway, we were playing Pitch in the basement. Just completely concrete, and there were no women in the house at all, and the doors were locked upstairs. Playing cards, all of a sudden, a woman's voice, clear as hell, said, "Victor," one of the corners of the basement. And all of us kind of looked at each other, and we finished that hand of cards, and we left. We left Victor there alone. Screw him.
Oh, Jesus.
I wasn't going to stay any farther.
Poor Victor.
No, the thing is, you know, that wasn't associated with the house. It couldn't have been. Because it was a brand new house, new foundation poured. Somebody might have died on that spot.
Yeah, yeah. We also, it ties too into, you know, thinking about the shopping mall story. It's like, you wonder, is it like some kind of poltergeist type activity, maybe, you know? Because women, you know, I figure it's like a retail clothing store. I figure there was probably a lot of ladies working there and that kind of the sort of thing that conjures up poltergeist activity, they think, you know?
Maybe. I don't know. Poltergeist activities are usually, associated with teenage girls. The only thing that happens when a bunch of women
work in the
environment is they start cycling at the same time.
What's that? Oh, that's true. Well, you'd think, given how many teenage girls are at shopping malls, that we'd see more poltergeists there.
Which there should be shit flying all over the place.
Yeah.
Exactly. Stay away from the Mongolian barbecue.
That will cause shit to be flying all over the place. Oh, man. This, how the psychic came, tried to force the entity out. That must make for an awkward, obviously it did when the lady came back to work. Must make for an awkward situation. Because, like, the paranormal entity's still there. It's like, hey man, thanks a lot. Thanks for bringing somebody in to shun me. Really appreciate that.
Yeah, I thought
that.
We were cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know if I was the entity, I'd be pissed.
No, it's just like Tim Tebow felt.
Exactly.
It's like, yeah, no, hey Tim, we're gonna bring in Peyton Manning to talk to. Just hang tight.
Yeah. It's like, thanks for selling all those jerseys. See you later. Now, one story that was on the blog that I found interesting because it constitutes a field trip on your part, and that's this trip to this place called Gravity Hill. So I always love these stories, where we can get your firsthand perspective on sort of going and visiting these places. I wish you'd go down to the Fae community, but maybe when I eventually make my trip out to Missouri, that's the first place I'll visit. But tell us about Gravity Hill. What is this?
Okay, if we do go to the Fae community, I hope they make really good popcorn.
Why do you say that?
What, can you imagine how cool fairy popcorn could be?
Oh. How about their drinks? How about, if I could drink with an elemental, that might be amazing. I bet you they have some fantastic brews.
Right, like Shamrock Shakes, only better.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
Gravity Hill, I love going places. Gravity Hill was especially fun because I knew nothing was going to kill me. It's in southern Missouri. Southwestern Missouri. I talked with a couple of students who lived from that area, and they were telling me about Gravity Hill, where you park your car and it moves by itself. And I did some research, and about every state has got one of these. A place where you can park your vehicle and it supposedly moves. Some places it's got a weird twist, like you park on train tracks,
yeah,
on a bridge. But this is a hill, and supposedly if you park on this hill, your car can get up to about 25 miles an hour just sitting in neutral. You know,
weird.
People are like, you know, this is, you know, it's an optical illusion. You look like you're flat, you know, because of the terrain, but really, you know, you're on a slope. That's why it moves.
Yeah.
So I took some levels from my garage and went down there, and I found a spot. I parked in a couple of spots and let the car go, and come to find out that the spots were on a slope. But I finally found one spot where I set these levels down that my car was sitting on a level plane.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't just set it on one spot. I set it all around my vehicle. So, I mean, there's no way that this thing should move when I put it in neutral.
Right.
You know, I marked this spot in the gravel road pretty well so I could go back and try it again and again and again. And I got in and put it in neutral, and boom, it took off. And I got up to about, you know, 15, 17 miles an hour.
Wow.
And that was pretty awesome. And I would back up and do the same thing again. The thing I think was really cool, I did it 7 times. It worked 6. I parked in exactly the same spot each time because I marked where the tires would be, and I made sure I put my vehicle in exactly the same spot every time.
Weird.
Well, and it didn't do it every time.
Hmm.
Now, the legend with this place is that, you know, there were kids that got killed in a car wreck, you know, whatever. There's really no proof of that. And supposedly, if you put flour on your bumper, there will be kids' handprints there.
Right. I was just going to ask about that aspect of these legends.
Yeah. Well, and you know, a lot of these, you know, places, a lot of these legends have the whole kid handprints thing. And,
right.
And I just, too cheap to waste flour, I just didn't wash my car for a while. And, you know, I got no handprints. But 6 out of 7 times, my car moved.
That's,
you know,
weird.
I would think that maybe there was something, you know, non-strange about it if it happened every time.
Right.
The fact
right.
that it didn't happen every time, you know, really, really tipped me off to where there, you know, there might be something to this gravity hill.
Did you feel like freaked out or any sort of weird emotional feeling in you when this was going on, other than maybe elation that it was happening?
No, that was it. The elation that it was happening. The, hey, this is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, like, static electrical feeling or anything weird like that?
No, nothing.
Interesting. Okay. Weird. What do your scientist friends think of this?
I never talked to them about it.
See,
thanks.
What?
Thanks for calling me out for to talk to my scientist friends.
I thought you would, you know, it isn't. I figured it's always the goal of the paranormal investigator to be proven right, so I thought you would enjoy, you know, being like, well, all right, dude, let's go. We'll go down to Gravity Hill. I'll show you.
Yeah, well, I'm going to drive 3 hours again with these guys just to show them the hill.
Then you won't be friends with them anymore.
What, have you ridden with me before? Yeah.
No, I just mean, with your luck, too, then you'd get down there and it wouldn't work anymore, and you'd be like, no, I'm serious, it happened. Oh,
yeah, with
boy.
A few colorful expletives in there. Yeah.
Another story I found interesting, only really because I'm completely burned out on Roswell stories, so I mean this with all due respect to the storyteller, but the only thing I really found interesting was the way you were approached by this guy telling the story. And this is the one about Roswell, UFOs, and an 8-year-old boy, and the guy who overheard his dad and some military-type guy talking about Roswell. I thought it was just really weird the way, you know, he just writes to you and sends you his phone number, and he's like, I have information you might want to know. Does that happen to you a lot, where people are like, they want to tell you a story, but they're reticent, so they also want you to kind of chase them a little bit or something?
Well, not usually. This was the strangest one that I had on that on that case, because usually, you know, people are like, okay, I had this encounter. Do you want to talk to me about it? Well, hell yes, I do.
Yeah.
You know, and this guy was, I mean, he sent me an email message out of the blue. I had no idea who this guy was. And the message was, hello, I might have some information you will want to hear. That was it.
Yeah.
And his telephone number. And so I wrote him back and said, any hints? And about 3 hours later, he wrote back and he said, what? Sorry, I thought you wanted information. UFO. No reply is necessary. And I was thinking, what the fuck? But anyway, I called his number and I talked to the guy. He was 67. He's, gosh, if he's still around. He's going to be in his early 70s by now. But his voice was really scratchy. He'd had lung cancer. Had one of his lungs removed. His throat was damaged when they were operating. He had also a tumor on his thyroid, so his voice was damaged. And anyway, so this guy he was telling me that he knows that he doesn't have all that much time left on the earth, and he wanted to get this story out, and he didn't want me to use his real name either. I called him Marty in the story, but you know, this kind of lent some credence to maybe this guy was telling me the truth, because he was, you know, not wanting any credibility, not wanting any credit for it.
Yeah.
Anyway, but he was telling me that when he was 8, his dad took him to the Pickwick Hotel in Kansas City, because a high school buddy of his dad's was going to be in town. He was stopping at the bus station and was going to stay in town overnight and take off after that. And they stopped at the hotel and met his dad's friend, and Marty doesn't know what branch of service his dad's friend was in, but he was wearing a military uniform. And this was in 1949. Anyway, so they went in the hotel room, and the guys were sitting at a table, and they were talking about things, and Marty was sitting on the bed trying to, you know, find out something to do with himself. You know, it's not like they had Nickelodeon at that time.
Yeah.
And he eventually started listening to them, and his dad's friend was talking about working at White Sands Missile Range, and which is the site of the atomic test. And when they were testing new missiles, he told his dad that there was an object, a flying object, a disc-shaped object that would circle the missiles. It was like it was inspecting them as they went up. And then it would just swish, go away.
Yeah.
And after listening to this, the dad, the line of questioning was eventually, you know, I heard a rumor about Roswell that, you know, one of these flying saucers crashed there. And Marty said that you know, my dad's friend got extremely serious. And he said, I can't talk about it. He said, it happened, it's real, but that's all I can tell you. And then the gentleman noticed that the boy was listening to them, and they both, you know, looked over and, you know, kind of made, you know, frowned, and his dad said, Marty, I know you heard this, but you got to forget everything. And they eventually, you know, after a little reunion was over, they left and went home. And at some point, it was a couple years later, Marty's dad took him to a UFO meeting in Kansas City. And during the meeting, he leaned over to Marty, and his dad leaned over to Marty and said, these people are squirrely as squirrels. And they just sit there and listened. And on the way home, Marty's dad said to him, what you saw tonight was horse hockey. He said, we know the truth. We heard the truth. You know, just that was it. And he said his dad never talked to him about it again.
Strange.
That was it. That was the guy's story.
It's weird, too, because the meeting was in 49, which is a couple of years after Roswell, and it's like most people didn't even know anything about Roswell until like the 80s, so it makes it even, you know, stranger in a sense.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was all over the press in 1947.
Yeah, I guess that's true, so maybe people did remember it, but then it kind of...
Yeah, I mean, we just forgot about it, you know, over the years.
Unless you're like a UFO. It's weird the UFO community seemed to not recall it for a long time either.
Well, I guess because I've got you know, a reproduction of the Roswell Daily Record
yeah.
in my office at work. You know, the flying, you know, disc crashed.
Yeah. Very strange. I just love the way the guy contacted you, like the weird text-esque response to UFO.
Yeah, it's like, I've got something you want to hear. UFO. Call me, no soup for you.
Now, speaking of strange correspondences, we talked about this one a while ago. I think it was in Darkness Walks. This was about the teenage kids that had like weird abilities, and I think they were trying to fight shadow people or something like that.
Yeah, it was Casey was the girl who contacted me. Yeah, they she had like a Scooby gang together.
Right.
And they were you know, combating shadow people, and yeah, it seems like every one of them had a different ability, the ability to see them or the ability to stop them. And
it's like the X-Men.
And, I mean, it sounded like, you know, the X-Men movie or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a correspondence with her for a while, for a number of months. And she would, you know, I mean, she told me stories about, you know, a shadow person appearing in her car as she was driving. And, she, you know, jerked her wheel and tried to drive her into a brick wall, but the brick wall had a pentagram and, it disappeared because, and she figured the pentagram was the source of power against these, you know, shadow entities. And so she had one tattooed on her hand.
Oh God.
Yeah. I frankly, Tim, I haven't heard anything from her since then.
All
right. It's like 2008 since I last heard from her.
Well, let's hope they're out there fighting the good fight for us.
Battling the forces of evil.
Yeah.
You know, if I ever go battle the forces of evil, I am wearing a Batman suit.
Have you seen the movie on Real Life Superheroes?
No, I have not.
There's people that do that.
Well, I know there's a guy, I don't remember his superhero name, but a 25-year-old guy in, I think it was in Washington State or maybe it was Oregon, who dressed up in a Superman, not a Superman suit, but a superhero suit and, you know, went to battle crime and, he was trying to stop a fight and, you know, between a guy and his girlfriend and the boyfriend beat the hell out of him.
That's got to be embarrassing when you're in the
Well, it's got to be. Yeah, I'm dressed up, you know, like Hawkman or some shit like that, and you know, some guy named Biff punches me out. That's really embarrassing.
Oh man, that's when you retire the superhero outfit. Now we talked about I got obsessed here for a while on the Fae Girl, but that's not the only tale of paranormal love that can be found at From the Shadows. There's also a tale of a story about a man who thinks that he may have been romantically involved with an alien.
And for the record, From the Shadows is all about love. Yes, a guy named Scott Palmer. He grew up in Marceline, Missouri, famous at least in Missouri because that's the town where Walt Disney lived until he was 5.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Anyway, the town's like 2,500 people. He grew up there, and in the early 80s, he and a friend moved to nearby Columbia, Missouri, where the University of Missouri is. His sister was going to school there, and he was looking for a job. So him and his buddy were crashing on his sister's couch, and she was living with a couple other girls, which is awesome if you're like 19 or 20 years old, hanging out with all these girls. And one he really liked. She was a blonde girl, really tall. He said she was dressed, she was, you know, looked like a gymnast, had blue eyes. Anyway, he took a real liking to her and flirted with her quite a bit. And eventually asked her out for a date, and she said yes. And you know, they went out. He said she was really, really weird. Anytime he talked with her, she was fairly emotionless. And whenever he'd bring up things at the time that were relevant, this was back in the day where the Rubik's Cube was relevant, and she had no idea what it was.
Oh, weird.
And, you know, he'd bring up, you know, events that people should know things about, like, who won the World Series, who won the Super Bowl this year. You know, a lot of people don't pay attention to that, but, you know, it's all over the news. And she didn't know anything about current events whatsoever, didn't know anything about pop culture whatsoever. And he just thought it was weird. And eventually he talked her into having sex with him. And
I like the way.
Well, some guys really have to work at it. And I guess if you're from Zeta Reticuli, I mean, it's, you know, it takes a lot of talking.
Yeah.
Or clicks and whistles, but we'll get to that in a minute. anyway, so he said that she was, again, really emotionless, and she was like she had no idea what they were doing. And she didn't talk a lot, didn't talk a lot before, didn't talk a lot after, and didn't act like anything had happened. A few days later, she announced that her sister was coming into town. And her sister came into town, and this guy got his buddy, who was also staying at the apartment. He's like, come on, you got to go on a double date. And the buddy, I interviewed him as well, and he was like, I don't know what he saw in that girl. She was pretty ugly. But he agreed to go out with his girl's sister, and they looked like almost identical twins. They're the same height, same gymnast body, blue eyes, amazingly pale skin. And before the date, the guys were sitting on the couch, and these two girls who said they were sisters started talking to each other, and they got into an argument and started yelling. And when they noticed the boys were paying attention to this, they walked into the other room. And both of the guys heard the same thing. Their voices turned into something that sounded like, you know, something from the cantina scene on Star Wars. You know, like an insect type noise.
Yeah.
You know, clicks, scraping, whistles, shrieks. And this scared the fuck out of them. And they ran, you know, they got out of there. They left and went and talked about this. And eventually they thought, you know, if these things are aliens, which they might be kind of ticked off that we're not there anymore. So they went back and went on the date. They took the girls to dinner and then dumped them back home and moved out of their sister's apartment, this guy's sister's apartment, as quick as possible.
Weird. Did he ever hear from this chick again or no? This is the 80s.
No, he didn't want to. Didn't want to at all. He would not give me his sister's contact information, but I talked him into getting a hold of his sister, and he said his sister she didn't want to give him any information about this girl at all.
Odd. And the weird part too is like, you wonder what they're, well, first of all, it's weird that it sounded like she was fairly emotionless. Then it changes on a dime and she's fighting with the sister and you wonder what they're fighting about. In the first
place. Which one gets to eat the head first.
Yeah, exactly. Very weird stuff. See, so that there is love blooming it from the shadows.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, I had skipped this one, but I want to bring it back because we're sort of not feeling the pinch on time. And this is the one about the man who never feels cold. Because as you say in the post, I mean, this has been well documented. This is paranormal, but then it goes into sort of like, you know, paranormal that's backed up by proof that this guy feels no cold. So it's a very bizarre story. So I guess
it only fits in paranormal because paranormal means beyond what's normal.
Right.
So it's kind of weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. A guy named Harold Deal from Lawson, Missouri, which Lawson's an interesting town. I actually lived there for a year. And this guy's from Lawson, Missouri. I wrote a Black Eyed Kids encounter from Lawson.
Huh.
So yeah, some strange things have happened there. Anyway, back in 1969, Harold Deal was an electrical contractor, and he had his son Larry, who was about 10 at the time, working on a house, and it was 9-something, and a thunderstorm hit, and his son Larry kept saying, "Dad, come on, please take me home. I don't like being out here in this thunderstorm." So they got in the truck and went home. And he looked at his watch when they pulled into the parking lot. It was like, I think, 9:21 or something p.m. He sent his son to the house to see if the door was open because he had a bunch of papers. He didn't want to get really wet. Anyway, his son opened the door and beckoned him to come inside. And Harold stepped out of his truck, walked a few steps, and then he said it's like he felt like his there was an explosion and it felt like his head was pushed down into his shoulders. What had happened is lightning struck him, and he was blasted out of his shoes. He had boots with tall laces, and he was just blasted out of those. He said later people found his shoes and all of the little eye holes, the eyelets that you lace up, were gone. Anyway, he didn't remember anything. He didn't know anything until like 4 o'clock in the morning. And then it was like everything was pins and needles. He couldn't move. He was in tremendous pain. He ended up having like two vertebrae removed from his back to relieve the pain, and he was told he would never walk again, and he eventually did. But one of the things that he discovered was that heat bothered him now. But other than heat, he couldn't feel pain, he couldn't taste anything, and he could not feel cold.
Ugh.
And as you're saying, this thing was well documented. Yes, I mean, he had all sorts of medical tests run. He was in, you know, featured in newspaper articles around the world. He was in, on news TV programs around the world. He wears shorts and a t-shirt all the time. Never wears a coat. He will, if he's feeling uncomfortable by the heat, he'll buy a bunch of bags of ice and just sit in the bathtub covered with bags of ice.
Okay.
He once appeared in, where was it, Hell, Michigan? I think that was the name of the town, Hell, Michigan, for some TV promotion, and he had to stand 4 hours in negative 70 degree temperatures, and it didn't damage his skin at all. He said he didn't feel cold at all, didn't hurt him at all.
See, that's the weird part, too. It's not that it just doesn't hurt him, but he doesn't.
I can fathom that. I can understand that his nerves were damaged to where he couldn't feel the pain, but it would still, you'd think it would damage the flesh, but it doesn't.
So weird. Bizarre. And it's like, how could that, the strange part is it's like, you could maybe understand, I don't know, someone being born with that kind of anomaly somehow, but then, but to gain that weird ability from being struck by lightning is so, you know, makes you wonder about the real potential of the human species in a way.
Right, like, you know, I'd love to get bitten by a radioactive spider.
Exactly.
No, it's the same type of thing. It's like he's now has a superpower.
Right, right.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean, I also interviewed a doctor in Chicago at a clinic that deals with electrical, you know, electrical shock. Lightning storms are severe electrical shocks, and she said that this sort of stuff happens. Weird things happen to people when they get hit with that much electricity. She doesn't know of any case like Harold Deal's where he can't feel cold at all, or he is not affected by it. He also went through sort of a spiritual transformation. He, at one point in his life, his wife at the time divorced him and left because of all the problems he was going through with the surgeries and the fact that he was now kind of an outcast. All of his former friends kind of abandoned him. He was close to committing suicide, and he said that he said God spoke to him. He said God spoke to him. He said God spoke to me, and he told me that I had a better purpose. And now Harold Deal works with the Lightning Strike and Electric Shock Survivors International Group, and he deals. He helps people through problems they have with you know what's happened to them.
Huh. Well, that's good. Yeah, well, it's strange. It's struck by lightning. No one wants that to happen. But then you hear the story, and you're like, ah, maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, let's go out there and play. Give me a golf club.
All right, now the last story I have here on the list is about some really strange creature called the Kalanoro that apparently lurks in Madagascar.
Right, and the reason I grabbed onto this is a professor from the University of Missouri has done a lot of work in Madagascar.
Right.
And there is, this started back in the late 1990s. This was a story, allegedly Navy SEALs photographed of a group of 13 Kalanoro who are gray, unidentified apes that have quills rolling, you know, going up and down its spine, and for some odd reason, their feet are on backward. Okay, again, as we talked about earlier in the interview, pictures, you know, I don't trust them at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can't believe them at all. And the ape-like thing with the quills in the back kind of remind me a little bit about, you know, the Chupacabra, but
right. That's what I was thinking. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not going there too much because it doesn't really suck blood. But this thing is also anyway. This professor from the University of Missouri. His name's Joe Hobbs. He studied a little bit about it, the indigenous cultures of Madagascar, and people there believe in this thing. They don't really see it as, you know, an unidentified ape with backward feet. They see it as more of a spiritual being, kind of like the elves and trolls, of European folklore.
Yeah.
And what this thing allegedly does is it steals children, from bad parents. Which to me kind of rings of, threatening, you know, society threatening parents.
Yeah.
You know, that if you're not nice to your kids, you know, the Colorado is going to come and get you.
It's like a supernatural social worker.
Right, exactly. Except for you don't have to go to classes afterwards. Yeah. One of the things I really, really like about this, this Colorado is that there are, tribes that, you know, have their children that are kidnapped. It's not that I like that part, but it's the part I like.
Yeah, yeah. Auteur phrase.
there's a different type of paranormal entity called a tromba, which is a spirit that, will demand, you know, you must give me, you know, this type of food, and I'll give you your kids, you know, I'll make the colonizer, I'll give you your kids back. And these people will give it food and Mr. Hobbs or Dr. Hobbs said that this one village that was having a problem with the Colonaro, there was one specific villager who was possessed by a tromba, this spirit. And the tromba would tell parents, if you leave offerings of honey and liquor in the forest, I'll make sure your kids come back. And the kids would go leave, or the parents would go leave their honey and liquor in the forest, and it would disappear and their kids would come back. I want that job.
Yeah, that sounds, yeah.
I would totally be possessed by a tromba. Yeah, you give me some honey and then some liquor. Yeah, you can have your kids, no problem. Sounds like extortion.
Yeah, that's a good deal. See, some of these paranormal entities haven't figured out. All right, now we've talked about a lot of devious and sinister and downright creepy creatures and entities in this 2-hour conversation, but you've kind of had your own run-in with a devious entity over the last few weeks, if not month or so. This is the plagiarist who has taken from you and won an award in stealing an article written by you, a humor article. So talk about this situation, Offit versus the plagiarist.
Well, this is, you know, something that you don't think. I mean, this is like, you know, getting crabs or something. It's going to happen to somebody else. It never happens to you.
Yeah.
All right. So, actually, I probably should have said headlights, but let's go with crabs.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, I mean, you don't think this sort of thing is going to happen. Like, somebody's going to steal your writing, your work, and put their name on it and pass it off as theirs. I mean, that's something that happened pre-internet.
Yeah.
You'd think. I mean, because if somebody were to do that, they'd get busted in 2 minutes because that's all it would take, or even less than that, to feed something in Google, and that's kind of what happened. I got contacted by a fellow humor columnist who now lives in Singapore. He was looking for an article that he'd written back in 2001, so he fed a few keywords that he knew he wrote in that specific order into Google, and his article came up. And it came up again and again and again, and two of those agains had a guy named John Flatland's name attached to it. And he was kind of upset and curious, and he did more research and discovered that this guy, and it's okay that I say John Flatland over and over because the guy has admitted to the Associated Press that he did plagiarize. So legally you're off the hook, Tim.
All right, yeah. No, my brother's a lawyer. We're all good.
Okay, cool. Anyway, yeah, so he looked and he found at least a dozen humor columnists who this guy had been plagiarizing over the years and passing the work off as their own, and, you know, one of the people was me, the guy that had stolen some of my stuff. And the initial email said, yes, and John Flatlands won the North Dakota Newspaper Association's Humor Columnist of the Year for 2011. We're not sure whose column it is, but we'll keep digging into it. And come to find out, it was mine. It's an article about that I wrote about me going to the grocery store and buying tampons for my wife.
And he just
and,
took it.
He won the award. So, and I was two emotions at the same time. I was flattered and angry.
Yeah.
So for a while, I was kind of flangry. Yeah. So I mean, because like, hey, my stuff's good enough for somebody to rip off. Oh, that bastard ripped me off. So I explored all sorts of options, talked to a number of other columnists, because he ripped off columnists from Singapore to Honolulu.
My goodness.
And come to find out, he got busted for this back in the 90s and still continue to do it. Since then, I explored legal stuff. I talked to a couple lawyers about it, and I didn't want any money because, one, newspaper people don't have any money. Because I was one at one point.
Yeah.
Because I teach now, and teachers don't have any money, so that's but the one thing I wanted, and the other humor columnist, this guy had ripped off, John Flatland, had ripped off. All we wanted was to get this out, to have people know that this guy is a thief.
Yeah.
And the Associated Press picked the story up for the Poynter Institute, which is, the go-to place for journalist education, got this. The National Society of Newspaper Columnists had this. NPR, all sorts of...
Oh, wow, so it's really gotten around.
...stuff in the Midwest. So this stuff went, not only did it go all over the Midwest, all over the United States, since one of the columnists was from, now lives in Singapore, it was in the Times of India.
Oh, wow.
So this guy's name is crap all over the place.
Good. What are the odds that they're going to just, like, change the name on the plaque and give you the award? You deserve it. I mean, or do you have to write in North Dakota to get it?
I don't know. I actually got a hold of the president of the North Dakota Newspaper Association, and is a very nice man. And he said to me, he goes, yeah, this is your column. We're really sorry that this happened. We had nothing to do with it, but we're really sorry about this. And I said, can I get, a copy of the award? He's like, I'll see what I can do to get it for you. Hopefully that means he's actually going to try. I would love a copy of the award with my name on it, but I think I would even more like a copy of the award with his name on it. So I could take a crayon and cross out John Flatland and write my name in.
My goodness. Now, from my understanding of the story, he put in his thing and he put in his resignation and bailed, right? Is he like nowhere to be found now, or is he kind of like falling on his sword and apologizing, or is he just sort of like, yeah, I did it and I'm out of here?
Well, yeah, that's kind of what happened when he got Dave Fox is the humor columnist who now lives in Singapore who initially discovered the plagiarism. He contacted the newspaper where this guy worked in Minnesota and talked to the publisher, and the publisher blew it off, first because John Flatland had great credentials. He was actually the president of the North Dakota Newspaper Association at one point. So this guy had great credentials, and so he blew it off, and then with a second, email and later phone call, this guy went and talked to Flatland about it, and Flatland's like, oh, yeah, I did it. Screw it. I'm quitting. I'm resigning before you can fire me. I'm out of here. To quote Eric Cartman, screw you guys, I'm going home. And nobody was able to get a hold of him for about a week and a half. Finally, the Associated Press bugged him enough to get this quote. Yes, I did it, but not as extensively as what they're saying.
Oh, God.
Even though we have evidence, so whatever.
What a dick. Well, good. No one will ever trust him again, so you don't steal from my friend, Jason.
Yeah, man. You're going to come out there to Minnesota and, beat some ass.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's what we got to hold. All the columnists, we got together and we're like, who's the closest? Okay, I was. Yeah, I'm not paying $3.60 a gallon of gas just to go up and kneecap somebody. It's crazy.
How, he must be like in his 60s or something by now, right? He's probably an old dude.
47 years old.
Oh, jeez. God, I thought it was weird, too, that never really digging into it, because I've been following this story. I thought it was weird, too. Like, his daughter's, like, an editor somewhere, and she's like, please stop calling him my dad.
Yeah, yeah, his daughter's an editor at a paper in Iowa. Yeah, she's one of the columnists got the guy from Honolulu got a hold of her, and she was like, okay, I'm going to look into this, but, yeah, I'm not claiming him. He's not my dad.
Oh, my God. That must make for an awkward Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
It's like, listen, could you just bring me on just, you know, weekly? No, dude, no.
Yeah. Yeah, no, Dad. Even worse at Christmas. Oh, yeah, thanks for the present, Dad. Where'd you steal it?
It's what I gave you last year.
There's nothing wrong with regifting.
Unless you're a serial plagiarist, then.
And unless, yes.
Or no, actually, he'd be more like, yeah, well, Bill got the same thing for his daughter, so I figured this would be the perfect gift for you.
No, because after a while, people will expect it. Oh, it's a present from Uncle Douchebag.
Oh, God. All right, so that's the status on the plagiarist. Well, I'm sorry it happened to you, but I guess I'm glad that it got, you know, exposed. So, it's very weird.
Yeah, well, it's just, again, I mean, in journalism, I mean, we are supposed to have ethics. We get them pounded into our head from college on. I mean, there's a plaque on the wall of every news organization in the United States, you know, saying what you should and shouldn't do. And, still stuff like this happens.
Yeah, yeah. It's just, you know, you wonder what goes through somebody's mind when they're doing that kind of thing. It's one thing to, like, you know, it's sort of an accidental plagiarism type thing. You hear those kind of stories, but this is just serial, blatant, over-the-top fucking copying.
No, this is cocky plagiarism.
Right.
Yeah, this is, I'm going to do this and you. This is not, I kind of read this in a book once, and I think it sounds kind of neat. I don't remember where I got it.
Right.
But, yeah, I'll change the words.
Right, right. This is like, well, like you said, on the one he won the award from, he just changed it to be from Missouri to North Dakota.
He did. And one of the things he changed is I had a footnote on the article I was, back when I used to cover sports, I was at a Monday night football game at Arrowhead Stadium in Kansas City, and I was taking a leak up in the press room bathroom, and Dan Dierdorf, Hall of Fame offensive lineman from the St. Louis Cardinals, who was on Monday Night Football at the time, stood next to me. And it was like, I wrote that, man, in the bathroom, you really can't ask for an autograph. So I told him no. that was my joke, and this guy took the exact joke, but he put Fran Tarkington instead of, you know, instead of Dierdorf, just to regionalize it.
Oh my God, it's probably his definition of being creative.
Right? Yeah, just to change that.
Yeah, I'm surprised he hasn't tried to like. To rebrand himself as this was like a long humorous thing he was trying to do. Oh, now you've got my joke.
Yeah, this is performance art.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Does it give any justice in the world the way our entertainment system works in this country? He's probably going to get $1 million book deal.
Exactly, a reality show or something.
Yeah.
Oh boy. All right. Well, that's the list here of the strange and unusual that I found in my perusal of From the Shadows. There's so much more in there, folks. You got to check it out. I highly recommend it. And of course, you're writing for Mysterious Universe all the time now as well. So you're all over the place.
Well, yeah, I try to be.
Exactly. Yeah. So what is, you know, what's going on with you now as 2012 unfolds, long-awaited 2012?
Oh yeah, I'm not predicting the world's coming to an end.
Okay, good.
Yeah, not gonna happen. Yeah, I love a story I read recently, not recently, it was a couple months ago, cause people think the Mayans disappeared. The Mayans didn't disappear. They're great advanced cultures with these big cities, and pyramids and whatnot. Yeah, they kind of moved away from those you know, great structures that we think about, but there are still Mayans. And in the story I read, they were like, yeah, I don't know what the big deal is.
Right.
It's not going to come to an end. You know, it's the end of an age. You know, Age of Aquarius, whatever, it comes to an end. So, yeah, just we'll still be here.
Yeah, it's the strangest thing. I mean, well, this has been going on since I got into this field, like in the early 2000s. Everyone's been talking about this 2012 thing. So I can't wait until
it's over. I remember this is what a paranormal geek I've been for a long time. I remember as maybe a 10-year-old kid reading about the end of the Mayan calendar in December 2012 and thinking, man, I'm going to be around for the end of the world. Well, that's unless I'm around for the end of the world when 2000 hits. You know, which end of the world am I going to worry about?
Yeah. Well, I always think back on the, I saved the front, I don't know if I still have it somewhere around here, but I saved the front page of the Boston Globe on January 1st, 2000. It had just like the most amazing sort of mind-bending lead line. It was like, you know, today's a day that, you know, your great-grandparents, like, never could experience, and your great-grandchildren never will either. It's like the start of a whole new millennium. It's like, it's pretty amazing when you think about it like that, that, you know.
Yeah,
and
it really annoyed me,
that.
And I fought with my publisher, because I was still working in the newspaper, industry, about the year 2000. It was not the new millennium.
Oh, I know. You've sent me emails about this.
I've given that speech before, haven't I?
Yes.
Yeah, it was 2001.
I know, but, you know.
And that was exactly the publisher's response was, well, you know, everybody thinks it is. Like, we're supposed to be spreading truth. Math is truth, right?
I know, it's true. But, you know, when they do like shows like I Love the 80s, they always start with 80. They never include 90 in it. So it's just the mind of man.
Yeah, that's one problem. That's one of the many, many problems I have with the media. Yeah, we're spreading false information because everybody thinks so. So that makes it right. Yeah, I got that speech from my parents when I was a kid.
Speaking of the media, I got a show recommendation for you. It's since you are in the media, and you're a big Bill Shatner fan.
Oh, Bill Shatner.
It's called Aftermath with William Shatner. It's an amazing show. It's like he interviews people who were involved in, like, craze of the moment sort of stories.
It's Aftermath?
Aftermath.
As not to be confused with After Mash starring Jamie Farr.
No. And it's really good. It's on Bio. I don't know if they still have new episodes or what, but they've been running the reruns, like, on Saturday mornings. And it's really good. It's like he had the guy who shot those teenagers on the subway in New York in the 80s. And he had Jessica Lynch. He had Mary J. Letourneau, the lady, the teacher who slept with her student. So it's like people who were involved in these like massive, scandalous type stories and how they dealt with the whole thing and the fallout of it.
That is awesome. I would love to. I will watch that.
Yeah.
I've not even heard of it.
I know. I never heard of it either. I was just flipping around, and I was like, because I knew that Bill Shatner had the talk show. And I'm like, what is this, another Bill Shatner show? What? This guy's amazing. Yeah, the one that hooked me was Unabomber's brother. Unbelievable. Yeah. I was like, holy
Ed
shit.
Kaczynski brother. That's great.
Yeah. And it was like how he grappled with deciding to turn his brother in and how the FBI screwed him by, like, revealing to everybody that he was the one that turned his brother in.
Yeah, talk about your awkward family reunions, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's worse than the plagiarist. Oh, yeah, I turned my brother in. He's in jail.
Apparently, Unabomber not returning his letters. That's what he said.
Well, I would be glad if the Unabomber did not return my letters. Yeah, and you know, the dude who shot the teenagers, I'm going to wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning remembering that guy's name.
What do you mean?
I know the guy's name. I remember following that story, and that name's going to pop in my head in the middle of the night, and I'm going to call you, Tim.
Oh, no.
Wake your ass up.
Let me see if I can find it here. Bernie Getz.
Bernie Getz!
Yeah.
Thank you. I'll sleep soundly tonight.
That was a chilling episode. That guy, I don't think he's all there in the head. So, but I don't know what to make of it. But he was he actually suggested to Shatner that he bring a model of the gun with him to the episode taping so he could actually recreate the motion of his shooting. So,
awesome TV.
Yeah, it was pretty wild.
And it's a shame Timothy McVeigh's not still alive.
This is true.
I mean, at least for TV.
Right, right. Yeah. But, then he just had some interesting turns of phrase. Or something like Shatner was like, well, how did you feel about the awesome power of what you were doing and pulling the trigger and all that? And he was like, that's the problem of the person who the bullet's going towards. It's like, that's not my concern. So it's like, wow, dude, you are one cold fucking motherfucker, man. You are cold. He's like, didn't you think about that? He's like, that's not my problem. That's their problem. He's like, once the bullet leaves the chamber, that's someone else's issue.
Shit, that's something Dirty Harry would say.
Yeah, dude. He was intense. Oh, God. So you said here at the beginning of the conversation that, you know, you've been doing some humor stuff, obviously. You know, a little bit more than the paranormal. What do you have cooking here, you know, in the next few months, weeks, years, all that stuff?
With what? Humor or what?
With everything. What can people look forward to from you?
Oh, with everything. I drove to Canada this summer.
Oh.
And it's a humor travel book. Because I just, you know, after actually stems from one of my last paranormal books, What Lurks Beyond, because in that book I, you know, found all the paranormal things I could within 100 miles of my house, and, you know, I was thinking, you know, damn, if I could find that, there's probably, you know, really cool non-paranormal things I could find.
Right.
So on a stretch of old U.S. highway that's like right outside my door, it goes all the way up to International Falls. And, I mean, there are all sorts of, you know, things like Glenn Miller's birthplace, the band leader, the town 4-H was founded in, Sinclair Lewis's boyhood home, really big fucking statues of really weird things like crows and Paul Bunyan. Just a bunch of just really interesting things. The town I stopped in is the home of Dudley Do-Right of the Canadian Mounted Police.
He was real?
No. Of course not. He was a cartoon character, but that's where they said he was from.
Oh, okay.
He was from Fort Francis, Ontario. So, I mean, I wrote about all this, and I actually ran into one paranormal story in Long Prairie, Minnesota. A guy, a radio announcer, he was 19, he was just getting started. He was driving home, rounded a corner out of the country, and there was a rocket sitting in the middle of the road.
Jesus.
And his car, just the electricity died, and he got out of the car, looked at it, and he was like, okay, I got to get around this. So he tried to start the car again because he was going to push it over. And the car wouldn't start, of course, so he got out, and these three little robots that looked like tin cans got out on three legs and stared at him for a few minutes, got back up in the vehicle, it took off, and his car started.
Jesus.
Yeah, kind of strange stuff, but
you'd like to think their robots are more advanced than ours, but that sounds like something you'd see in like Japan now. Like a little tin can thing with little stick legs.
No, it sounds like stuff that I saw in Johnny Sacco and his flying robot back when I was a kid. Well, but yeah, I've got that book I'm working on, and right now another humor writer and I are we've got a website out. It's actually a Blogspot site. It's called Why Are Men Such Assholes. It's at whyaremensuchassholes.blogspot.com. And what the basic gist of this is we're taking questions from women that they've always wanted to ask guys, but either were too afraid to ask or didn't expect an honest answer from their boyfriend or husband. So we're taking that and giving them an honest answer.
Nice.
It's not always polite.
Uh-oh.
And we drop the F-bomb a lot. Maybe it's rated R, but, yeah.
So it's like this show.
Pretty much. So, yeah, that's why I mentioned it. So that's out there.
Interesting. All right. I'll have to check that out. If you ever need input on, you know, asshole-ish tendencies, feel free to ask.
Actually, Tim, yeah, this guy and I, we were making a list of people we wanted to look at the blog, and I was like, because it's eventually something we're hoping to turn into a book, but we're trying to get input from people to see if we're going in the right direction. And I wrote a list of people I was going to get an invite to look at, and yours was on there, and I was like, man, I don't know. I don't know if I should invite Tim.
Oh, no, why?
I don't know if I didn't want to offend Tim.
Oh, no. It's perfectly fine.
All right, well, take a look at it. Why are men such assholes? blogspot.com.
I will. I've just bookmarked it, so.
Awesome.
Interesting. I'll have to check this out. Jason Offutt weighing in on the battle of the sexes. So that's
an ongoing battle.
Exactly. It's been going on since the Garden of Eden. So that's in the humor realm. What about in the paranormal genre?
Well, yeah, I mentioned it earlier. I'm compiling stories for a book called Dangerous Entities.
Oh, yeah.
In that, I'll cover some of the things that I talked about tonight, the priest, the gnome, probably going to touch on shadow people and black-eyed kids. They're also the Harlequin.
Mm-hmm.
I've got to talk about the Harlequin. And there are also some encounters that I've collected over the past year about human-looking people. They look like people, except for there's something about them that everybody around them recognizes as, you know, just being wrong.
What do you mean?
Just being terrifying. Just the mere presence of this person makes you want to stand 10 fucking feet away.
Well, you have a story in the on the blog, actually. I almost put it in the notes, but I was trying to keep it tight. But you have a story about a guy at a bar, and he's hitting on a woman, and this, like, 6'8" monstrous man, like, sits down, and the woman, like, takes off. And the guy seems to have some kind of weird, like, psychic connection almost. Like, he knows the dude's name. I think the guy's name was Tim, actually.
The guy's name was Tim. Yeah,
yeah.
It was at a casino in California, and this guy was, like, 200 miles away from home, and his home was a town of about 20,000 people, and he was he'd never seen this guy before. He said he looked like he just was a lumberjack walked out of the forest. And he was flirting with this girl next to him, and this guy, he felt his presence before the guy even walked up and sat down. But when he got up and sat down, he turned around and looked at this guy, and when he turned back, the woman he was flirting with was gone. And this guy started talking to him, yeah, like he kind of knew him, like, you know, he called him by his name, Tim. He mentioned the name of the town this guy was from. And this Tim was, and maybe you're like this too, Tim. This guy was unnerved, but he was like, damn it, I'm not going to leave before I finish my drink.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And when he finished his drink, the guy said, you're all right, Tim, which kind of felt like to Tim that this guy was saying, okay, I'm not going to kill you. And yeah, when he went and talked to the woman who ran who ran off, he finally eventually found her someplace else in the casino, and she said something like, didn't you get the I'm going to kill you and throw you in the back of my van vibe from that dude?
Jesus, that is weird. Yeah.
Yeah, that's one of the stories that I was talking about, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It tweaked me out when I was reading it. It's like, I think, honestly, dude, it's like a little past midnight here, and every time I do these interviews with you, after I get off the phone, I'm like tweaked out for like till I go to bed. So you're a spooky man.
Well, that's, you know, which is really, really always weirded me out that I can do that. But I also write some funny shit.
I know you're a funny guy too.
I'm like, you know, yeah. There's some Sybil thing going on here, maybe.
Now, what about the paranormal journalism course? I know you did that a few years ago. Any motion to maybe get that going again, or is that kind of tied up with the politics of academia kind of thing?
No, actually, everybody in the department and in our particular college of the university was all for it. So, I mean, I could do it again probably any time I wanted to. We've been going through curriculum revisions, so I've put it on the back burner. But I've got a lot of students that are interested, and I'm the paranormal guy, so I get all sorts of people wandering in my office, a couple times a week asking some question about ghost UFOs or when I'm going to teach that class again.
Nice.
I'll let you know what I do.
Absolutely. Please do. All right. So we've talked about upcoming humor projects and upcoming paranormal stuff, and next time I talk to you, it'll probably be in a couple weeks to talk about upcoming baseball stuff. But by the time people hear this, it'll be after that. So we'll have our own weird time.
The story is Tommy John surgery. Hopefully it'll be over by then, and he'll be recuperating.
Yeah. What is it with this Tommy John surgery, dude? Everyone's getting that now.
Yeah, I don't know. I just know that we got a lot of bad news at once. We got we were trying to talk to Peyton Manning. Well, he signed with our arch nemesis, the Broncos. And about the same day, the Missouri Tigers lost in the first round of the NCAA, tournament. And then all these injuries happened. Yeah, to our baseball team. So not good to be a Kansas City sports fan right now.
Oh yeah.
Or well, ever, I guess.
In the 80s, it was good.
Yeah, I vaguely remember.
Well, on that note, we've gone 2.5 hours, and I just can't thank you enough, Jason. I can't believe how fast it went by, and just amazingly quickly this went by. And I loved hearing about these stories and talking to you about these stories and trying to figure out what the hell's going on with these things. I mean, you have an amazing life dealing with all these tales and stuff. I envy you, but sometimes I don't, because I'm frightened by a lot of them. So,
for me, it's mostly all fun. Not all of it, but mostly. And Tim, I always enjoy talking with you. It's like we're sitting in a bar shooting the shit.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So, thank you once again for coming back on the show. And obviously, we're going to be talking again in the future for sure.
Okay. Absolutely, man. Just anytime you want to have me on.
Be more than happy, buddy.
That does it for this edition of BOA Audio Season 7. Big, big thanks to our buddy Jason Offutt for coming back on the show. Be sure to check out his many fine books and head on over to his website from-the-shadows.blogspot.com for many, many more creepy tales from Jason Offutt. Be sure to check it out. Moving right along now, it's time for BOA Audio Listener Feedback, and we're going to break a little bit from tradition here because we have got some breaking news that I'm sure the hardcore BOA Audio listeners will be very happy to hear, since it ties up one of the major running mysteries of the end caps of this program. As you heard last week, we got an email from Jason asking for an update on the mysterious William Zabel, and I mentioned that we had not found any new information about William Zabel since the last time we provided an update on the program. I wrote Jason back, and just by happenstance, he mentioned that he had found William Zabel on Facebook, but had not heard back from him. He tried to contact him. That was a revelation to me. I never even considered looking for William Zabel on Facebook. So, I punch in his name. Lo and behold, there's William Zabel on Facebook. Of course, I befriended him and then subsequently wrote him a message asking if this was William Zabel of Columbine Conspiracy fame. He accepted my friend request, and then the next day I received a response from William Zabel confirming that yes, indeed, it is the William Zabel. Included in the response was an update on what he's been up to, as well as maybe some indication of what's been going on here with this mysterious disappearance. So I'm going to read an excerpt here from the message that William Zabel sent to me. He says, "I am still working on Columbine and have in fact tracked nearly 50 people dead after April 20th, 1999, under suspicious circumstances. This not only includes students, but staff, parents, and others in some way connected to Columbine. The website is still not where I want it to be and have had strange things happen to it. causing me to change hosting companies 3 times now. I also think that somebody in government is blocking emails and phone calls, as I never got any of those after we talked the last time. I also have a friend who is helping me with continual research into school shootings, and she says that when she calls, a recorded message says the phone has been disconnected. Also, many people report that their emails get sent to me successfully, but I never receive them. So there you go. That's the update on William Zabel. He is alive and well. I responded to this message just to make things even more mysterious and bizarre. I responded to the message, said, you know, it's great to hear from you. I don't know what's been going on here and why you haven't gotten any of my emails and stuff. That is all very strange. We would love to have you back on the program to get an update on what you've been working on. Sent that message to him last week and, of course, have yet to hear any response from William Zabel to that invitation to come back on the program. So I'm going to say, you know, at this point, I'm 90% sure this is the real William Zabel, but who knows? This could be a William Zabel imposter. This could be somebody just pretending to be William Zabel, sort of riding on the infamy of the episode and his subsequent disappearance, but I'm pretty sure it is William Zabel. It sounded like him in the tone of the message, but I cannot confirm 100% until I get on the phone with him and speak to him. I am really hoping that we can connect with William Zabel sometime here in the next few weeks and get him back on BOA Audio, if indeed it is the real William Zabel. I will keep everybody posted as to the status of this mystery, but for now, I feel pretty safe in saying that William Zabel is alive and well, and he has been found, and nothing nefarious has happened to him. So, mystery solved here on the program, and hopefully we'll get him back on the show in the near future to expand on the Columbine conspiracy and pick up where we left off a few years ago here on the program. I got to give big thanks to Jason, who mentioned the whole Facebook connection. I never would have even thought to look for William Zabel on Facebook. Everybody's on Facebook, I guess. So thank you to Jason for providing the last piece of the puzzle to tracking down the mysterious William Zabel. Since it is BOA Audio listener feedback, we'll do one email here from a listener that made me laugh, and then we'll get you on your way. This one comes from Tom in Dayton. Here's what he has to say. Roland Watson, just one thing I don't understand. That was the subject line. And then all in caps, every bleeping word that guy said, with all exclamation points. Sincerely, Tom in Dayton. And he actually didn't say bleeping. He said asterisk, percentage, caret, money sign, that whole thing. Kudos for creativity in the bleeping part. And I feel your pain, Tom. I understand where you're coming from. I was concerned at times that people might have a hard time sort of getting into the Roland Watson episode because his Scottish accent was so thick. But when I listened to it, I understood all of it, and when I did the interview with him, I understood everything that he had to say. So I feel like the more you listen, the better understanding you get of what Roland Watson was saying. And there are a lot of programs out there that wouldn't have Roland Watson on the show because they'd be afraid that his accent was too thick, but BOA Audio takes the risks, and we bring on the guests regardless of how they sound, as long as they're not speaking a totally foreign language and I can't understand them. So apologies to you, Tom, that you did not enjoy that program, presumably. But stay tuned. There's plenty more programs coming down the pike at you here from BOA Audio. Thus concludes this installment of BOA Audio Listener Feedback. Thanks to Tom in Dayton for the chuckle-inducing email. And, of course, thanks once again to Jason for helping us with the additional clue to track down William Zabel. If you'd like to be a part of future installments of BOA Audio Listener Feedback, there are a myriad of ways to do so. You can head on over to binallofamerica.com, B-I-N-N-A-L-L of America.com, and click the contact button. Or just write to boaaudio@hotmail.com, and I'll receive your email there. And if you want to get a little more interactive, you can join up at the official BOA forum, the US of E.com, T-H-E-U-S OFE.com. It is BOA's Paranormal Playground. Lots of cool folks there talking about the world of the esoteric as well as pop culture. Always lots of fun to be had at the US of E. And I would be remiss if I did not mention that we are on Facebook and Twitter. So just punch in Binall, B-I-N-N-A-L-L, into their search engines and you'll find me on those sites. Feel free to befriend me, follow me, or poke me. It's all good, and I'd be happy to add you to my online circle of friends. And if you are on Facebook, check out the Binall of America page there. Like us on Facebook, and you'll get cool updates and additional ramblings from me regarding the BOA franchise. Up next, please allow me to thank the outstanding and esteemed BOA staff, Leslie, Chiron, Regan Lee, Joe V, Tina Senna, Richard Thomas, Bruce Pretty, Tony Morrill, and our webmaster, Jeremy Boston. We got a new column posted since the last time you heard from me. That one's from Bruce Pretty, talking about the Marjorie Fish Star Map case, and I'm sitting on a couple columns from Regan Lee and Leslie, so stay tuned to Binall of America for new missives from the longtime BOA staff members. We say it all the time, but it bears repeating, my friends, if you're only listening to BOA audio and you're not reading the columns at Binall of America, then you're only getting half of the story. BOA, make it a part of your everyday search for esoteric news and opinion. Now comes the time in the program where I take my hat off and pass it around to the hardcore BOA audio listeners who've stuck around to the very end and ask you to make a donation to help keep the BOA franchise up and running. There are two ways in which you can help us out. First of all, you can head on over to Binall of America and click the PayPal button. That's on the left-hand side of the screen. That'll bring you to PayPal. They'll help you to facilitate a donation to BOA. Or you can write to us at our snail mail address, and that is as follows. Tim Binall, P.O. Box 232, Pinehurst, Mass. 01866. The complete address, of course, can be found at Binall of America under the PayPal button. As always, no donation is too small, and all donations go towards keeping Binall of America and BOA audio up and running, freely available, and commercial-free for all of our great readers and listeners the world over. On the next edition of BOA Audio, we've got another mind-bending installment of the program for you, my friends. Our guest is Gerard Williams, co-author of the truly captivating and sensational book, Grey Wolf, The Escape of Adolf Hitler. And this is a tremendous conversation. I loved this book and could not wait to sit down with Gerard Williams and explore this story. Essentially, Gerard Williams and his co-author lay out the case that Adolf Hitler escaped from Germany and ended up hiding out in Argentina following World War II. I can't really give you too much of a preview here because I haven't sat down and edited the program. That's on my agenda for later tonight. But I can tell you it's not just the Hitler death hoax story we're going to explore. We're also going to talk about a whole bunch of little things involving World War II. I guess little is probably not the right word. We're going to talk about the insane plundering of Europe by the Nazis, how they stole all kinds of art and artifacts throughout Europe. We're going to get into really some of the players behind the scenes in the Nazi party and how they were really pulling the strings behind Hitler. And we'll get into some of the really specialized units of the British and American armies that were running around throughout Europe during the war doing all kinds of weird stuff. So it's not just the Hitler death hoax. It's a lot of other additional sort of esoteric and arcane elements surrounding World War II, and truly a conversation that I really, really enjoyed quite a bit. And I think the BOA audio listeners are going to be captivated by this edition of the program. That's next time on BOA Audio, Gerard Williams, co-author of Grey Wolf, The Escape of Adolf Hitler. And on that note, we close the book on this edition of the program. Big, big thanks once again to Jason Offit for coming back on the show. Big thanks to Tom in Dayton for writing in for BOA audio listener feedback. And, of course, enormous thanks to all the folks out there who are listening right now, the hardcore BOA audio listeners. You guys are the best, the fuel that drives the BOA mothership. Thank you for your support of the program. You folks are amazing. Thank you once again for making BOA Audio a part of your esoteric audio playlist. Until next time, this is Tim Benall, thanking you for listening and signing off.